But the most traveling that I did was I wanted, you know, I felt I needed to do extensive interviews. I ended up doing nearly 60 hours of taped interview with Neil over the course of many months. And then I did a total of 125 interviews with people, you know, that living from coast to coast. I wanted to make sure that I talked to people that, who knew Neil, who'd worked with Neil, who had been on cruise with Neil. So I spoke to virtually all the living Apollo astronauts, and I talked to a lot of people from Mission Control, people like Gene Kranz and Glenn Lunny. And I talked, I it was his whole life. It wasn't just, I went back and I talked to kids. I say kids, young people that were kids with Neil when Neil was a kid.
Right.
I went back to Ohio and, you know, talked to the woman he took to the senior prom. And
oh, my goodness.
A couple of his former teachers. And then, of course, I talked to his brother and sister. He had a two years younger sister named June and a four-year younger brother named Dean. And I needed to do interviews with them. And then the hardest interview for me to arrange was the interview with Neil's first wife, Janet.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, Janet, they had been divorced for, approaching 10 years. And, you know, from Janet's point of view, why should she, you know, go back through what really in some ways was, you know, she had good memories, of course, but there were a lot of hard memories, too, including the death of an infant child when they were, you know, when they were living out in California and Neil was a test pilot, the little girl had a brain tumor. And then the fact that they're divorced in the end they did divorce. And so Janet really wasn't very anxious to talk to me. And it took some negotiating, both informally and formally, to get that done. But I just felt like, you know, again, this was going to be the one and only Armstrong biography. And to not talk to the woman who was his wife, who was there and raised his kids and was there all through, you know, his flying career, and was there and was a historical personality herself. I mean, the astronauts' wives, you know, they became celebrities, you know, of a sort themselves. And I needed to hear what she had to say.
Sure.
So whatever it took, and I'll leave it at that, whatever it took, I was committed to doing it to get Janet to talk to me. And in the end, she agreed to a couple of days, you know, really about 15, 16 hours of tape-recorded interview, which I still think was crucial to the character of the book.
Mm-hmm. So did you talk to Neil's other crewmates, Dave Scott and in Apollo 11, Buzz and
Mike? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I remember very vividly all of those interviews. I mean, no matter with Frank, I have a very vivid memory of my interview with Frank Borman down in Las Cruces, Mexico, with Harrison Schmidt in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I interviewed Buzz actually I interviewed him a couple of times, but my lengthiest interview, he had come into Albuquerque, New Mexico on some business. He had some ideas of his that he was pitching to some companies, and he came in and I picked him up at the airport and we met the next morning and spent the morning, with an interview. So yeah, I spent a lot of time with him. I visited Mike Collins's house in South Florida. You know, there wasn't, I tried my best, Peter, not to leave any stone unturned.
Sure.
The only person that I can say I didn't get to that I should have, although I don't think it's a big loss to the book, really, is, you know, Neil had two sons, and now in their late 40s, I guess, Mark and Rick. Rick is the oldest, and Rick was of an age, you know, at the time of Apollo 11, that he had memories. I mean, he had memories of Apollo 11 and the aftermath, and so Rick agreed to, you know, he agreed to talking to me as long as I, you know, as for as long as I wanted to. Mark was a little bit, the younger one was a little, I never really interviewed Mark, although I've talked to him a lot since. He was very, very close to his mother.
Okay.
And as long as Janet was still unsure about talking to me, Mark was going to be unsure about talking.
Right. Okay.
So then once I did get Janet talking to me, I asked her, I said, well, could you help me? You know, could you help me with Mark? Because I would like to talk to Mark. And Janet said, well, Jim, he was so young at the time of Apollo 11. He really doesn't have any recall of it that would be helpful to you. You know, if you've talked to Rick, you've gotten enough. And I let that go. But, you know, honestly, I wasn't just I wasn't just interested in Mark's memory of Apollo 11, which might not have been there, but, you know, what it was like to be the son of Neil Armstrong for the rest of his life. You know, when he was in high school, when he was in college, to be Neil Armstrong's son, that was kind of part of the story, too. So I should have talked to Mark, but, you know, I was so busy crossing the country getting to people, if someone, it just didn't look like it was one. I lowered it on the priority list a bit, but I shouldn't have. I should have talked to him, too.
Well, you can always do more with these things, I guess.
There is more, actually, because, you know, the book came out in 2005, and Neil didn't die until last summer, and he was very active, as you Aussies should know. I mean, he was down there a couple of times, you know, and giving talks, and he was very active, more active than he had been his whole life in terms of testifying before the U.S. Congress, in terms of, you know, he was unhappy with some of the decisions that the Obama administration had made about, you know, the human spaceflight program. And so he testified along with Gene Cernan and former NASA Administrator Mike Griffin and Jim Lovell. And, you know, there's a lot that he did, you know, from 2005 to his death in 2012 that really needs to be put at the end of the book. And so hopefully someday, you know, I'll go back and add that. You know, it was a much bigger book, even than it's a big book now, but the editors cut it back quite a bit for, I guess, just because you have to find the price point for a book. Yeah. But I have thought about kind of putting out the, you know, what they say about movies, the director's cut.
Right. Okay.
I thought about doing that with the book because there were parts of it that were, you know, struck out of the book that, you know, that people might really be interested in knowing. The original manuscript is in the archive at Purdue University where Neil put his papers. And so, you know, in a sense, it exists, what I said in its whole. But I would rather, you know, at some point maybe be able to get that director's cut published.
Sure. Well, I guess a possibility might be an ebook type of option.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's I've been, you know, it's funny. I love books. I love to, you know, and as someone who writes books, you know, you have some ambivalence about the ebook trade.
It is nice to pick it up and hold your hand and sit on the.
I do more and more. You know, it's hard not to just pick them up off of Amazon or wherever. I mean, I've got a number of books now. In fact, one of the textbooks I'm using in a course this year, not only did I tell the students to order it as an ebook, but I've been reading it as an ebook. So, right. Yeah, times are changing, and we've got to adjust to them.
Sure.